What up, Canes fans? Before we get started, just wanted to talk to you guys about the Tank Brewery real quick. The Tank is located in the heart of Miami in Dade County at 5100 Northwest 72nd Avenue. This place is awesome. I've been there. The beer is outstanding. The food is great. Whether you're watching the Canes game, the Heat game there with your buddies, you're having a guys' night out, or you're having a date night with the missus, it's a great place to hang out. So you can order online at thetankbrewingtakeout.com or call them at 786-801-1554 for delivery or pickup. And here's the thing. If you use the promo code TANK4SUP, you will get free delivery on game days. And so that is TANK4SUP, the number four, not spell it out, but TANK4SUP. So go check out our friends at the Tank Brewing. They've been great to us. So take it away, Jordan.
All right. Also, we want you guys to check out our guy, Stickers by AB. That's at STICKERZ by AB. You know, I've been ordering a bunch of stuff from him. You know, we have a collaboration sticker that has our logo on it. So make sure you're checking him out. Give him a follow on Twitter. He's just a good dude, and he's helping us design our merch. So yeah, man, it's make sure you're supporting the good people that help us out here on Fours Up.
You're listening to the Fours Up podcast with your host Marsh.
What up? What up? What up, Canes fans? It is the Fours Up podcast. It is Thursday, December 3rd. Wow, we are in December. It's Christmas season. Tis the goddamn season.
Dude, so after we recorded last time, you know, we talked about the night before with Seth Rogen and James Franco and who's the dude with three names? I can never remember his name.
I know who you're talking about, but I don't know his name.
Yeah, the one dude from 50-50. But anyways, yeah, I watched that with my wife. She's not really into movies like that, like before we met, and she loved it. She thought it was incredible. So
very, very funny.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite Christmas movie, honestly.
Yeah, man, we got a game in 2 days. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. I'm excited to watch the Canes again. I'm actually going to be in Wendover, which is like, place. Yeah, it's I'm going to be in Wendover for the game. Oh, yeah, dude. $5 blackjack tables. It's like right on the, for those who don't know, it's right on the Utah-Nevada border. And there's nothing to do there but gamble. And it's like a truck stop with casinos, pretty much.
It's literally like it's like it takes you 2 minutes to go through the town. And it's like six or seven run-down old-ass casinos.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's dirty.
Yep. It's just like, it's a straight drive west from Salt Lake City. I think they built it there to get all the people from Salt Lake that want to gamble.
All the degenerate Mormons.
Yeah, like me.
same. I'm eating my Chipotle. But yeah, man, work's going good. Everything good. I'm ready for football.
Oh, me too, man. Me too. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. The ACC changed rules on us, which was really lame.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care, right? Because my official feelings is that it's better for us to not play in the ACC championship and get a New Year's Six berth. So along those lines, we can get into it later. I'm kind of thinking that, you know, if Clemson beats Va Tech and we lose out on an opportunity for the championship game, I'm thinking maybe we cancel the North Carolina game.
Dude, I am supposed to go to the North Carolina game next week with our boy AB.
Uh-huh. Awesome, dude. Yeah, he was telling me about that.
Hopefully, you know, I'm kind of afraid Sam Howell's going to throw for about 450 yards, but by God, it'll be fun to be back at Hard Rock Stadium.
Yeah, man.
I guess kind of.
I just kind of view that game as like, we have a lot to lose and nothing to gain, right? Because if we beat Duke and then we are done, like I feel like we're getting in at least the Orange Bowl, if not the Fiesta Bowl, right?
I'm not ready for this season to be over, but I'm just ready for normal football to be back. I'm sure as hell ready for recruiting to be over for this cycle, because good God, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so last night, Savion Collins decommitted from Miami. I think we all kind of saw that coming. But I said this on 4th and 20 today. I was asleep, or at least I was going to sleep. Collins decommits, and about 15 Canes fans DM'd me, like, saying, what the hell? Like, yep. They were freaking out. And I'm like, guys, just shut up. We knew this was coming for, like, 6 months.
Yep.
I don't know. But we got a good show tonight. I'm very, very excited. Gonna bring on our first guest now. What do you say?
Absolutely. I'll call him in. Hey, man, what's up?
What's up, guys? How y'all doing?
My boy Holloway. What's going on, brother?
Marsh, what's up, family? Good to see you. Good to hear from you. I can't see anybody.
But. Hey, you know me, man. I'm not a big camera guy, so. how you doing, man? How's the holidays treating you?
Well, it's pretty cold up here, but we make the best of it.
Yeah. Yep. I know you pretty well. I've done your show a few times, but you're in North Dakota or South Dakota? Remind the people.
I'm in Fargo, North Dakota.
Ugh. Oh man.
Oh, how dude. I mean, I won't lie. Being back in South Florida, it is pretty.
Oh,
nice.
Oh yeah, yeah, Mister. I'm back in Dade, and everyone dresses weird.
Hey man, I'm back in Broward. I'm a Broward kid.
I forgot about that.
Okay, so let's get right into it. Got a lot of things to go over. First things first, we got Duke in 48 hours. We haven't played in almost 3 weeks. A lot of people are saying they're a little nervous for this game. I am expecting nothing less than a blowout. I mean, Duke is 2-7. I expect us to start a little rusty. How are you feeling?
Let me ask you a quick question. Have you seen any snaps of Duke seasons?
I mean, I've watched tape, yeah, in preparation for this game.
Okay, which game did you choose to watch?
I watched the Georgia Tech game and the UNC game, and I believe they played I watched another one. I can't remember.
Well, there's no way in the world that anyone can turn on the film of Georgia Tech and see a team that they truly believe is 1-5, 2-whatever they are. You saw a team that fought tooth and nail back and forth. And yeah, Georgia Tech isn't that good either. But you saw a team that went toe-to-toe with a team that's kind of similar in their approach, offensively at least, as the Miami Hurricanes are. And it was 28 all at halftime. Okay, so this team is going to be well-coached. This team is already going to have to be played about 2 or 3 games. While we were gone, they were playing.
Yeah.
And not only were we gone, we weren't even practicing. Okay, we spent this whole week just trying to get back in football shape. Yeah. Let alone put a game plan together enough to go out and win a football game by four or five touchdowns, like a lot of other people think we're going to do. Yeah. I'm very nervous about this. I mean, I've always had my gripes and my issues with how we run our program and how we play week in and week out, especially with a win-to-win culture. I think it's the worst thing you can do to a young man is to fill his head with do enough to get by and we will praise you. I think that's atrocious. Yeah. And this is where you're really going to be tested. You're going to see if that culture has taken root or if these young men really know I have to go out here and dominate. You're going to fill that out on Saturday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And the player that really stuck out to me on Duke is on their defense, Chris Rumpf. Very, very talented player. Is there anyone besides him that really sticks out to you and you think that could give Miami problems?
Oh, man, either one of their edge rushers. Give me cause to pause with how our offense decides when they want to play and how they want to play from time to time. That's about it. I think them as a defense, especially because we have a little bit more success against the 3-4 fronts, but they're very multiple in their approach. Like they'll give the 34 look, but in some instances it's really old school to where it looks like a 50 front. Like, it'll literally be the three-down lineman and the two outside linebackers all up at the LOS. You know, so it's not like one's dropping back and one's rushing. They will send five, no problem, which would create what? One-on-one problems.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At our biggest issue.
Yeah.
So our five linemen have had problems blocking three and four people. Imagine everybody being one-on-one. That doesn't sound too good to me.
Especially when you're getting a guy like Chris Rumpf matched up one-on-one with one of our linemen, right? That's a matchup nightmare for us.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you about the offensive line, because you're a lineman guy, you know the techniques and really break down that film. How would you grade the offensive line this year? How do you think Coach Justice has done in his first year as the offensive line coach?
Well, I tell you this much, he's heaven sent. I truly believe, like, Coach Garrett Justice is so important. I think people think what we're seeing right now, okay, you have to realize in coaching, especially when the fronts, only the elite of the elite get return on investment immediately. His return on investment is building up the mental psyche of these young men that was torn down by Stacy Searles, who has the 1980s view of MFing everyone and down talking everyone and you freaking suck, your mom this. Like, he has that type of approach to football. Okay, and it's 2020. You don't talk to young men like that anymore. And if you do, you better have a great reason for it. And even then, your head coach is supposed to step in and make sure that doesn't happen anymore. So I really like the things that I hear about. And I've had conversations with a couple of players. And he's like the very first amongst Coach Dave Feely, amongst some of the new GAs. He's one of those top four or five names you hear immediately about how they truly love Coach Justice. Now, as far as the product that we're seeing on the field right now, it's C plus on its best day. They do enough, and that's what I mean when I say that a win's a win trickles down to every little thing. If you're preaching do enough just to win, that means a young man to do just enough to pass his test, just enough to get over the conditioning test, just enough to graduate. You know, instead of understanding that there's a mindset we want to implement, that we want to be the absolute best and do things at the highest level and at a detail-oriented level all the time with everything. And we don't come to the podium happy about beating Vatek by 1 point. Yeah. We're pissed because that's not good enough. That's not what we want to do. We'll enjoy the win, of course. The game had a lot of context to what happened. Mm-hmm. But you don't allow something like that to get in your program.
Yeah, hey, dude, you fit right in on this show because I've been griping all year. You know, I'm saying it's not good enough to barely beat Pitt's backup quarterback. It's not good enough to barely beat NC State's or Virginia's backup quarterback. You know, it's not good to, I mean, dude, beating Vatek by 1 point, just, it doesn't do it for me. And nope. And I'm with you. Like, that's kind of my idea with this bend don't break defense too, is I'm not down to get run over all game, and then when you need a stop, to barely pull it out, right? Because one of these days, that's not going to happen. And then it's going to derail the whole season, right? So I'm with you, man.
Not only that, I can explain to you, because I think for the listeners and for people who can hear our voice, I want you to just take back to 2 weeks ago. Our million-dollar defensive coordinator got on the presser and literally said, I hope that ESPN and the ACC Digital Network throw me a little bit of a bonus.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
For ratings. That's in the program.
What?
That's what's being taught. Literally an hour after the game, the first thing Nestor Silvera tweets out, a win's a win. What?
And he didn't even use those words. I think he said a win is a effing win or something like that.
That means that it is in the pro. That means that's being taught.
Well, I got a lot to unpack there. First of all, are we really paying Blake Baker $1 million? And so, I can see your face right now, and it's making me laugh.
Trust me, I'm a YouTuber, so the expressions are for a reason. It all comes together, baby. It works together.
No, it's great. It's great. I wish that our listeners could see it. That's why I mentioned it. And then second of all, like I didn't hear that. That's alarming, right? Because we are barely beating teams, and he's thinking like, hey, I need that kickback from ESPN. It's like, dude, we should be blowing these teams out. And you know, like we can complain all we want about the playoff rankings and stuff, but at the end of the day, we are not. I mean, would you feel confident rolling up to Iowa State and playing them head to head right now?
Nope. Down the list. I've always said we're maybe at our best. You know, I'm talking about Tallahassee, Louisville, NC State offensive performance. We're 8 or 9 if we play our best game.
Yeah.
But even then, that's New Year's Six Bowl, which is where we'll probably end up going. That's pretty solid, or right outside of it. You know, I understand we're not there. I'm not one of those people. Yes, I played. Yes, I currently coach. But I'm not one of those people that think, oh, it's the Canes. They're supposed to win by 60 and run it up. Yeah. No, I'm not saying that that's how it's supposed to be. But don't tell me that this is the best that we can do and I'm just supposed to take it.
Yeah.
When I watch this film, when I know and I communicate with our players, Or just from watch, even if you do it on a fan's view, like the brand of football we're putting out there, you better be happy they're giving us 10. Happy they're giving us 11.
I agree,
anybody,
man.
Anybody in the top 10 went to Bot Tech right now, they wouldn't win by 1.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. Well, and I think and I was listening in on the, you know, the press conference with Blake Baker when he said that. When he said that, I was like, the hell? I was like, I was just so taken aback by it, because then a few days later, Rhett Lashley spoke to the media and he was like, yeah, we're nowhere close where we need to be. And it's just the difference in being content with average and wanting and the difference between wanting more and understanding that, yeah, this is not the we're better than this. Like, we should be expecting more and we can deliver more. But it's just that mindset that has overruled the program that, oh, okay, we can beat these teams by 1, but at least we win.
And in a year, I'm going to take you back to one of the first times that it created a divide. Because, I mean, Marsh, you're a part of it. You've seen me get attacked and you also see me be praised on Twitter. Okay, I'm one of those people that will say it how I see it. I don't care. Yeah. You know, come at me, my name, my number, where I work, where I went to school, all of that is public. So if it really is a problem, you know where to find me, okay? But I'm, you know, I'm nobody's registered badass. I'm not here for any of that. But what I am saying is, when you speak the truth, there usually creates a divide. Yep. There was a picture of Coach Diaz after a 19-14 win over Virginia where we looked like we were supposed to run out of there by 40 points. And this man is slipping and sliding on the sideline.
Oh.
And I got on live and I went ballistic. And
yeah,
they did not see why I was so angry. Oh, these players love it. You should just accept it, Wholesome. No, there's certain things you don't do. Because that leaves in the mind of these players, we're at a party, we're just having fun, and before you know it, you're at the University of Miami graduation 4 or 5 years later, and you didn't achieve what you thought you were coming here to achieve. It goes like that. Every second, you got to be striving for something. It's a moving object. Every second, you got to be striving to that championship. Because there's so many other people in front of you that all have the same goals as you, that work just as hard as you, that have better coaches. And you got to do more if you want to get there before they do. And we're not doing it in Coral Gables. We're not.
And I said something about that picture after the UVA game as well, and people are like, oh, what? Yeah, what's so bad about a coach showing enthusiasm? And I'm like, it's you don't get it. You don't understand. Why are you like slipping and sliding after a 5-point win over a previously 1-3 team with a backup quarterback in, when we should have easily scored 35 points? Easily. I want to switch now to maybe a little controversial topic with with coaches. I want to ask you first about their opinions, and it's going around, and I've been asked about it. I'm sure you've been asked about it. Coach Rumpf, what are your thoughts on him moving forward with the University of Miami? Just, do you think it's time to possibly find a new cornerbacks coach? Because, I love Mike Rumpf. I love what he did and has done for the University of Miami. You know, he's a national champion. He's an outstanding guy. But there comes a point where if you are trying to transform this program and bring it back to an elite level, these recruits, they're going to want – it's not even his lack of recruiting, but it's almost a lack of development. I mean, Al Blades Jr., DJ Ivy, they're solid, but I would say that they are underperforming for what they potentially could be as players. I don't know. What are your thoughts on him and that whole situation?
Oh, man, Marsh put me on spot, man. You never know who's listening. All right. Well, my professional answer and my personal answer are kind of the same, okay? I don't ever think it's my job, as someone who's working as hard as he is, to go into the coaching fraternity full-time once I'm done with grad school. I don't know if it's my job to call for someone's job. But what I will say is I think every single head coach should and does sit down and evaluate their staff, not only their players, not only their assistant coaches, their coordinators, but themselves. There needs to be an evaluation. And if we have the means, and what I mean by the means is not always the funds, because there's money in at the University of Miami. There's money there. There's no question about it. If we wanted to go make some of those big time hires, we could. It's just they don't want to. That's the conversation no one wants to have. Okay, that's not the realization they want to really come to. It's because this logo that sits behind me and that's over my heart, they don't care about being the greatest at football. That's not what the institution is worried about. They never were. That's the thing. It was always the team versus the University of Miami. That's why we're the U. That's the football program. Mm-hmm. What we built was on us. They could care less how we did it. But to answer your question, I think that if we were to evaluate, and if we had a good replacement and the means to go find one, I think it would be in our best interest to evaluate to the point where if that was a chance, then do it. But if you can't go get anyone better, if you can't go get anyone that's willing to deal with what Coach Banda and Coach Menidez like to do to their cornerbacks coaches, then maybe everybody isn't on board for doing that. So
that was a very professional but accurate answer, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, you said it perfectly. I've spoken my mind about this. I've kind of, I was pro Rumpf and I was against the guys that called for his job, but there just comes a point where, maybe it's time for just a change. And if there is someone out there who you think can be a better better coach and better at developing these players, then by all means go. I mean, we do have the money. You right. can't, don't have the money, but we're paying Blake Baker $1 million to be a defensive coordinator.
That's shocking to me, man. Like, just that's
depressingly shocking.
How? That's my first question is how. Like, what did he do to earn $1 million a year?
I mean, it's sad, man. I can't go in as hard as I would want to.
Yeah.
Because if someone said, Wholesome, you're the defensive coordinator at the University of Miami, I could care less about what some guy is talking about me.
Yeah. Right?
But I bet you this much, my young men, every scholarship defensive player, any person I came in contact with would never think that doing enough to win would be okay. And yeah. That's just how it is.
Well, and that's just maybe, not a winning mentality. Like, that's not what you – that's – I don't get that. I don't get it.
Me I either, because I think – like, when I tweeted that out, and Brad, you seen it, and also Marsh, you saw it too. Marsh, I think you may even quote tweeted or something. But
we're usually in agreement on Twitter, so I probably did.
You know, I was getting it from all angles, and all I kept telling them was, take some time, listen, read that out loud, what I just said, okay? That is a mediocre mindset.
Yeah.
Not did I call it the coaches mediocre? Did I call it players mediocre? I said that mindset is mediocre. Okay? And at the end of the day, fans, which is what I am to the University of Miami right now, we can have our own opinions. If the fan base was the one saying it, I would have a problem. Because we don't technically have a direct correlation as to what happens with the program. So we should just be happy that we win games. Okay. But then there's a different level of fans who either played it or coached it and understand it when they're watching it. They know there's a difference. And this is the conversation I had on my channel for well over a month now. There's two terms, and they sound very similar. Okay? It's playing, winning football, or winning football games. Now, if I talk really fast, they sound very similar, but they're two different things.
Yep.
Are you winning football or are you winning football games? Because one side, there's a foundation. And people hate this term, there's a process. There's a culture. There's coaching. There's development. And on the other side, hey, we're recruiting our butt off, and you just go out there and play kill the man with the ball and throw bombs, and let's figure it out however we do.
No, I love that you say that, because I think the difference, to use a real-world analogy, take a team like Clemson, right? They drop a game to Notre Dame. You know, teams like Clemson and Alabama, they play winning football, right? They have an incredible infrastructure. They have I don't know if moral code is the right word, but they have, like, a football code, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when they drop a game, it's not a big deal, right? Like, everyone can look around, even if they get disqualified from a title that year, you can all look around and say, like, next year we have a chance again. Mm-hmm. But here at the University of Miami, we are clamoring for seasons like 2017, and we are clamoring for seasons like this year, where we are squeaking past really bad teams. Mm-hmm. We're squeaking past backup quarterbacks. And then we're doing a victory lap over double-digit wins, because that is a massive improvement from last year, because we weren't winning games, right? Like you said, you know, using that phrase, we're not playing winning football, but we're winning games, right? But usually what we do is win half our games and not play winning football. So now we're winning most of our games, but we're still not playing winning football. So I think you hit the nail on the head, my friend. I love it.
Well, and I am a huge believer in, you know, terms like the process and culture. And following last year, it was obvious that the culture at the University of Miami was almost the biggest problem. Because that is what has been lacking the last 15 years. It's not the lack of talent. Lord knows we always have the talent to win 10, 11 games every year, but that's what a lot of fans don't understand. And that's why I started, you know, everyone on Twitter probably knows by now I'm a huge, Nick Saban fan. I've been reading books about him, and it's staggering to read what he says and then see the difference in the lack of culture at a University of Miami program. But yeah, you preach on, brother.
It's funny you say that, because no matter what, you know, and I don't like to get into religion. I don't get into stuff like that. But we are what we put into our bodies. That's just science.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the truth. No matter what you do, whatever you put in, and, you know, whatever book you want to crack or faith you have, there's a sense of that same sentence in some shape, form, or fashion. We are what we eat. We are what we put inside of our body. We are what we continuously do. Yada, yada, yada. Same thing. Okay? I sit here and read and study. Got coaches like Coach Saban, Coach Obermeyer. I even started to get a little dabble in some Lane Kiffin in
there. Yep.
Some people may or may not like that. You know, and anybody that knows me knows I am a huge, huge lover of Mario Cristobal. I think he is the answer, hands down, at the University of Miami until someone else pops up and becomes a better favorite later on. But all of those coaches have some things in common. And one of the main things they have is when they speak about their young men, there's a way that you understand that they want the absolute best out of you, and they don't have to give you a halftime speech. They don't have to scream and lie to your parents and when you're recruiting them. Okay, and some people do the bag man thing. That happens, yes. But when you build a program, it's about really making them better. And the lessons that you learn to become a better football player, you can take that through anything. If you want to be a great student, what are you going to do? Study your behind off. Well, you can't be the best running back in the country if you ain't willing to run, if you ain't willing to lift. So you do all the things to become a good football player, but you don't want to do the right things to become a better person, to become a better student. Okay, it all has to work together. And I'm not saying that Coach Diaz does not do these things, because I'm not in the program to know if he isn't. But I do know that when it comes to our brand of football, literally in 2020, it's one sentence. Do enough to win.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do that.
Ugh.
Hopefully, I'll say it on YouTube until I'm blue in the face. I say it on Mark Rogers TV. I'll say it on here if and when I'm ever able to come back.
Hey, you are invited anytime you want.
People hear this. We have to make sure it's put out there. That crap is mediocre, and it's no better than Coach Randy Shannon saying people are flying around, and we had an electric practice today, as much as I love Coach Randy Shannon. It's no better than Al Golden refusing to fire his brother-in-law, and it's no better than Mark Richt choosing his son over going out with a bang and having a good legacy and not just turning into a retirement home. Okay, all those things held this program from taking the higher step. And we got to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you make some really good points about Manny Diaz. And, you know, I'm a believer in Manny. I'm of the belief that he's learning. I think he's a smart dude, right? I think there's a huge important juxtaposition between this year and last year. Mm-hmm. And that last year was – I will admit, you know, I was eating everything that Manny was feeding us, right? Like, admittedly, 100% admittedly.
How could you not?
Exactly.
He pulls up in a yacht and shuts down up at Tallahassee. I mean, he comes in, he talks about having a fast, aggressive offense to match his fast, aggressive defense. Yep. I mean, he basically gave college football a proverbial middle finger. Yeah. How could you? I mean, at Miami, that's what we grew up hearing stories about.
Exactly.
Some of you all may have lived it. I'm young, so I didn't live the glory days.
Yeah.
You know, some of the listeners out there. But I mean, this dude was like front page news almost every day with something crazy. But continue.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I was eating it. So I, you know, whatever. But in retrospect, it was a clown show. Especially when you pair it with how we did in the season. Because really, if you win, if you run the table and you kick everybody's behind, you know, night to night, then it looks really cool, right? If you go 6-7, it's a clown show. You know, there's memes being made of him on live streams, and there's wrestling, and there's, you know, yachts and just all this booze. And you know what I mean? Yeah, it's just – it's a clown show, man. This year has been so much better, and this is why I believe in Manny right now. It's a fluid situation, but I am all aboard the Manny train right now, and I feel like he's learning. I feel like, you know, at the end of the year, he probably did some self-reflection and thought, like, that was a whole lot of style and not a lot of substance. And so I need to flip it. And, you know, I said this after that Virginia game. I said it on this podcast was I'd give Manny the benefit of the doubt with the slip and slide thing. I said he's clearly in this learning process of how to be effective as a coach, but still have the players love him. Because almost all of them have his back. They all love Manny, right?
Yeah.
But it's because he clowns with them, you know? Like, he behaves, on occasion, he behaves like a young man. And sometimes that's what these kids need. Sometimes it's not, you know, to make them better. And so I definitely tried to give Manny the benefit of the doubt in that situation. You know, it was wrong, in my opinion. However, I believe, hopefully, he can look at that at the end of the year and be like, that was stupid. You know, I need to demand more. And you know, he needs to line up his philosophy more with the type of stuff that you're saying, in that I can no longer demand mediocrity from these kids. Because, guess, I mean, like you said, you are what you, you know, you are what you put into your mind or your body or whatever. And we've become incredibly mediocre, you know?
Yeah, and I remember when I first started YouTube, it was the spring of 2018, going into that fall. And it's funny because some people felt like I picked a very convenient time when we were getting back up there to get into YouTube. And it was something I just did spontaneously. I didn't think about it. It's just my friends were always saying, you got all these ideas. You talking to us on the phone for 4 hours, put it out there, you know, like make a YouTube channel. And I did, and it kind of blew up, and, you know, I'm thankful for that. It's been an amazing opportunity. But I say that because you look at, if someone wants to say after the 2016 and 17 season that Miami would not be either in the playoffs or a perennial 10-win team, I would tell you you were crazy. I mean, you think about what we were building. 2016, you win a bowl game for the first time. We looked so sharp in that West. Well, after the second half, we looked so sharp. That first quarter was really hard to watch.
Yeah, I was
offensively,
so
especially. I mean, to find out Brad Kaya gets chewed out for pulling and throwing it because, according to Mark Richt, that wasn't the right read. It's like, oh, man, we got that guy coming back. You know, that's really crazy. But everyone said, like, throw the now routes. They're playing 15 yards off. We throw it one time. We break 60 yards. Amon Richards takes it to the crib, touchdown. That you could turn it off right then and know the outcome of the game. From that second on, the one thing West Virginia was terrified of, we brought. They knew the defense was elite. They knew we had a pretty good QB and one of the best tight ends in college football at the time. But once Brad Kaya opened that up, oh, it was over. You know, when you look at that, then you turn, that's 9-4. Then you turn around in 2017. Some people call it fool's gold. I don't like saying that because those young men had to go out there and do what they did and win the games that they did. So it didn't work out. But I think that that season was actually pretty good, in my opinion. You look at 2017, 10 wins, you beat Notre Dame, you beat Vatek. You break the Tallahassee streak. Like, all of this stuff is going on an upward trajectory. And to see it just flatline and go tumbling down for two more years was horrible. And
one
thing people forget in all of this is that you have real living human beings whose livelihoods we were sacrificing. And when we recruit them and we tell them to come out here and play for us, and we wasted them. We wasted their talents. We wasted their efforts. Horrible.
Well, and you know what? You know what's funny is that, so in the spring of 2018, that's when I joined State of the U. So we kind of have similar, you know, timelines and things like that. And yeah, it the last 2 years, I mean, it was definitely a funny timing to, you know, start covering the Canes, but I want to switch gears, you know, for, cause we only have a few minutes left, and don't worry, we're definitely going to have you on, many more times, but you know, early national signing day is in a few weeks. Terrence Lewis got the crystal ball to Auburn. So it looks like that is a no-go. Markavius Brown looks like he could be going to Ole Miss. We have about three or four spots left. What is your outlook on how we should finish this 2021 class? If you have any guys you think we could sign or that we should sign, what do you think about that?
You know what? To be honest with everyone who's listening, if we were to just make sure we sign the class we currently have, I would be overtoply happy.
Yeah.
Of course, there's people I would want us to add in. But if you were to tell me that not only does Leonard Taylor sign with us officially, but he's early enrolling, and by this time next month, we'll already be an official Miami Hurricane, like practicing Miami Hurricane. Yeah. He will be on campus, moved in Miami Hurricane, the number one defensive tackle in the country. I would laugh. Like, yeah, no, that guy went to Florida. He's not coming to Miami. Not only did he pick us on CBS, not only did he shut it down. Like, literally, you see, a lot of people say that. He really shut it down. And not only is he signing in December, he's also early enrolling. Like, the impact of stuff like that. And James Williams, only because he's going to a private school, can't enroll early. You know, some schools don't allow you to do that. Okay, but he's shutting it down and signing in December also. You have Romello Brinson and Big Baby Seymour, Elijah Arroyo, Chase Smith, Cam Kitchens, the offensive lineman McLaughlin, Tyler Johnson, Jaquan Johnson's little brother, legacy player, Thomas Davis, who I think is a really good outside linebacker, edge rusher type for us, kind of like a Trent Harris coming in to play linebacker.
Yeah.
Brantley, a young man who I think is not only a culture player, but is going to give us one heck of an effort any snap he gets. And Deshaun Troutman, who I love his film. Love.
That dude is a missile.
Not only, he's a leader too.
Yeah.
And I mean like old school, grab you by your face mask, you better get it right, leader.
He's got that old school cane in him.
Yeah. And player to player, that's okay. Once you start creeping in the coaches doing that, it ain't 1968 no more. We don't do stuff. That's my whole gripe with how some coaches handle that. I really, really, really dislike that treatment of other young men. But every name I just listed off, except for James Williams, not only is signing early, they're all early enrollees. That's the key that we just started doing like 4 or 5 years ago. Because we thought, oh, we're Miami private school, we don't do that. Be here when you get here, whether it's summer session A, B, or 2 weeks before the first game. Think about the bodies we're bringing in and adding to our practices.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where I am. I know we're kind of short on time. I could really go in with recruiting. Losing Collins was something that a lot of us in the know kind of just was waiting to be public. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's been in the works for months.
Yeah. Surprised it took this long, honestly.
Huh?
I'm surprised it took up until now, like, to happen. Yeah.
And I think that was mainly because he has to find someone else that's willing to allow him. Because the biggest gripe with that, and I will let your listeners know, is that he is an offensive lineman who wants to play defensive line at the college level. And upon reevaluation, it's just
not going to happen in Miami.
You know what I'm saying? It's just
not going to happen here at the U. He's not going to play D-line here. So.
And you know what? Hopefully he finds that right situation for him. So I think it'll work in, you know, for both parties.
Yeah. And it's all good. All you can do is wish a young man, you know, Godspeed. You got it. Go absolutely. Do your thing.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the only time that I mean, it might be the only time this season I've tweeted at a player or a recruit directly and saying, you know, I'd like, Go find what you're looking for, man. I really do hope the best for him. So,
Absolutely. Hey, man, but I know we're getting low on time, and I do have to, get out of here. So, hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. Yet again, I'm Wholesome One Holloway from YouTube. You go ahead and type it in. Wholesome is how you spell Wholesome. And then the number one in Holloway, my last name, Holloway. Type it in on YouTube, and I do film breakdowns. I do Monday Night Lives at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Whenever Marsh decides he wants to answer the phone, we have to do lives. You know, he's the only person that gets me to literally not go to work for a couple hours and talk to him on live. So. He's my boy, so
love
man,
him,
I appreciate
hey, man.
It so much.
Thank you're
you
right,
so
family
much.
Brother.
I'll do it one time for you guys. Fours up. I'll
do it with you, bro. Thank you so much, man. Peace, we appreciate brother. You having me on.
All right, have a great one.
Yep, see ya. Cool. Hey, that Mark, great choice, man. Olson was an incredible guest. And make sure you all are checking out his YouTube.
Yeah, he's that dude. He's just a good person. Like, I love talking to him, just not even about football.
Yeah.
Good dude to talk about. And he was talking our language.
Absolutely. He was more eloquently stating what I've been saying all year, you know, like I saw on our Facebook page, and no hard feelings. I'm not trying to like throw anyone under the bus or anything, but somebody commented on our very first episode and was like, or no, sorry, our UAB breakdown. And they were like, love the podcast, but Jordan sounded like he was at a funeral. Like, come on, man, we won, you know? And, I mean, we weren't playing winning football. I mean, that's been my problem this whole year. And like Holson put it more eloquently than I have been. And that, you know, like, yeah, we're winning games, but what happens when Clemson rolls into town? Like, well, we get our butts kicked. Yeah. You know, they dominate us in every facet. So,
and, you know, and Holson, you know, he's got a very, very bright future ahead of him in coaching, and he puts it in a way, not like in a media way.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, because I mean, the way that I rant about things, I'm a radio guy. I just rant. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, sometimes I don't, properly articulate big words. I had to sound that out, but, what I'm trying to say. So, you know, he says it in a way that fans that are like, oh, process, you know, bullshit. He explains it in a way that, you know, those fans can understand.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you, man.
Okay.
Speaking of rants, did you see me battling the Heat Twitter?
So I texted our second guest. It's Eric Robinson. We've had him on. Before, so we are waiting for him to come on, but you damn it, Jordan.
What?
You and your hate, your Heat hatred.
I don't, dude, that's the thing. I don't even hate the Heat. I like the Heat. Like, Goran Dragic has been one of my favorite players forever. Like, Jimmy Butler, I have long been a Jimmy Butler fan. I love Bam Adebayo's game. That's the thing. I don't hate the Heat. What happens is that I will say something about the Jazz, or I will, you know what I mean? And then Heat fans jump into my mentions and tell me how stupid I am for liking the Utah Jazz. And that is turning me into a Heat hater. Like, you know what I mean?
You know, you know, it's funny because Toast and I were talking. I can't remember if it was this morning or yesterday morning. I swear, the day's just... they blend together when you're recording radio at 6 a.m. But we were talking about how sensitive South Florida sports fans are. And it's so true.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing that pisses me off, because I have all the time people are telling me that Bam was better than Rudy last year. And don't get me wrong. If they were like stocks, right, and you were playing it like the stock market, you'd put your money on Bam. There's no doubt about that. You know, Rudy is a commodity that is stable right now and then will go down. Bam is going to be skyrocketing for the next 3 years, right? So that's not my argument. But people all the time just filling up my mentions just like Bam was better than Rudy last year. Well, there's no statistics to support that. And then they're like, well, what about the eye test? And it's like, hold on a minute. This is my rant, okay? How many times on this show and any other show, when you talk about South Florida fans not showing up to Miami games, they say, well, there's so much to do. You know, like it's a town where you have to be flashy to catch our attention, right? Or else we're just not going to give you attention. That goes for all sports teams. So
people are telling me that they're watching Rudy Gobert tip off against the Phoenix Suns or the Denver Nuggets or the Minnesota Timberwolves at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on a Tuesday, and yet they can't go to Miami Hurricanes games or they can't go to Heat games or whatever because there's too much to do and it's not interesting enough. Yet they're going to tune in to watch Rudy Gobert on a Tuesday night at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
Like, do you get where I'm going with that? Is,
well,
like,
I mean, now living in Florida, I hell no, I'm not staying up to, like, I love the Jazz. Like, depending on the day, I'll stay up late and watch them. But
most
people are, yeah, I completely understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's my big gripe. That's what I'm so frustrated about is people are telling me, like, oh, Rudy sucks. All he does is guard the rim. It's like, well, you've actually never watched him. So, you know, his offensive win shares are like sixth highest in the NBA. And I'm not saying he's the sixth best offensive player, but clearly, like, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? It means that he clearly does stuff on offense. So,
well, I think they're both – I feel like they're a little different I feel like they're like kind of different players at the same position, if that makes sense.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you know, it's not even a big deal. I was just frustrated today. It's not even a big deal. Like, Bam is incredible. Like, Heat fans should feel so lucky to have him. He's only going to get better. He has a legitimate chance to become a top 10 NBA player. You know what I mean? Like, he'll probably be, I mean, the center position honestly is fairly weak, especially if you're not counting Anthony Davis as a center.
Yeah, like the true center position.
Yeah, the true center position. That's like Jokic and Gobert and Embiid and Bam. Like, Bam will probably be on an all-NBA team at the center position, especially if they stop counting Anthony Davis for a really long time. So it's not a knock.
Well, he sure as hell better live up to all this because he just signed signed the most lucrative contract in Miami Heat history.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, he deserved it right now. You know, I mean, he got a max and that's his market value. He's already a great player.
Yeah, absolutely.
My gripe is that I'm tired of people telling me that they watch my team when I know they don't. It's like, I'm not stupid.
I know, man. I mean, people probably watch the Lakers or something like that, but the Jazz get no respect, and it's very, very sad.
Yeah, there's no way that you're watching the fourth quarter of a Jazz game at 1 a.m. Eastern time on a weekday.
Especially when they only get, like, two ESPN games a year.
Yeah. And, dude, that's another thing, too, is I have people, you know, saying, like, you know, I was like, they were one bucket away from beating the Nuggets. Because they, you know, people say, oh, they lost in the first round, whatever. Okay, we were one bucket away from beating the Nuggets in seven games. Okay, and that was without our second best player on offense. And they're like, oh, yeah, but the Nuggets were missing Will Barton. Okay, I'm going to give you some stats, Marsh. I'm sorry for ranting.
No, you're good.
There was only 20 players in the NBA last year that played over 2,000 minutes, that had 25% usage rate, and had 20 points per game. And one of them was Bojan Bogdanović, who the Jazz were missing in the bubble. And so you're going to tell me that he's Will Barton? Well, guess what? Will Barton's like the seventh or eighth guy for the Denver Nuggets. Like, you can't miss. Dude, Bojan Bogdanović averaged more points per game than Jimmy Butler last year.
Yeah.
So, like, don't tell me about losing in the first round. It's just, it's ignorant.
It's ignorant.
Exactly. Okay, Eric's ready for us. He just called.
All right, let's get him on.
Okay.
What's going on, guys?
Eric, what's up, man? Sorry about that. I was ranting about the Utah Jazz when you called. So sorry about that, bro.
No problem at all.
Eric, what's going on, man? How you been?
Been pretty good, man. Been missing some Miami football, but glad we get a chance to get that back this weekend.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, I gotta ask you because I know. So for those of you who don't know, Eric's a huge Canes fan. He also covers the Falcons for SB Nation. Mm-hmm. What happened last week? Like, where did that come from?
You know what?
3-6 win.
I think it's a bunch of guys in the locker room that know that the future is not as clear and transparent as they want it to be. So you got a bunch of guys out there that are just playing. You know, guys that are wanting to prove themselves, guys that are wanting to show that they want to be back for 2021. You know, this team the Falcons are playing much differently now with Raheem Morris than they did with Dan Quinn. And it's like night and day. It's incredible, especially on the defensive side of the ball. That was a really, really good Oakland, Las Vegas offense that they put, you know, handcuffs on, and they held them to 6 points. And this was a Raiders offense that scored 31 plus points over the past three games. And I think it was four of the last five as well. But, you know, this Raiders team is still a good team. I still think they're going to sneak into a wild card spot, but they ran into a buzzsaw last week. I think they kind of took the Falcons lightly a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. So, and I also wanted to ask you this. In the latest mock draft I saw, it has the Falcons taking Gregory Rousseau at either 10 or 11. Yes. How would you feel about that?
Oh, man, that would be like Christmas. Of course. Because, you know, it's the Falcons getting an edge rusher, which they desperately need, and they're getting an edge rusher from – you know, from the factory that is the U. The one concern with Rousseau, and I think you guys will share this sentiment, you know, he's still a baby when it comes to the position. I think he only has, 14 career games under his belt. So he's really still learning, you know, how to be an edge rusher. I mean, the guy was, he played safety and receiver in high school, you know, came to the U, redshirted the first year, I don't know how he did it, but threw on 50 or 60 pounds. And then he, you know, finally started playing edge rusher. And then, you know, he had that breakout year, of course, but he's still learning the nuances of the position. So I think he's worthy of a possible top 10, top 15 pick at worst. He's getting a lot of Myles Garrett comparisons, and I see it. You know, just right now, he's just freakishly, you know, as far as, you know, the frame goes, height, weight, wingspan, he's a freak athlete right now, but he still is probably going to take him maybe a couple of years to truly get his legs up under him as an edge rusher.
Well, and I was talking about that today on my radio show. I feel like it really would have benefited Rousseau to play this year. I mean, when you only have 1 year under your belt, you're taking a big, big risk.
Right.
In opting out. But okay, so
especially when you're still, you know, transitioning from another position. It's not like he played edge rusher, you know, through high school. Like, he's literally learning this position on the fly. So
he's kind of just like a project player in a way. But okay, so the Canes are finally back on Saturday after 3 weeks of no football. A lot of people. Our first guest was he's nervous, and a lot of Canes fans are very nervous about this game, and rightfully so. I see it as I would be a lot more nervous if we were playing a more talented team, but it's a 2-7 Duke squad that, you know, gives up a ton of points. They have some talent on the defensive line, but still, they're 2-7. There's no reason. And we are the healthiest we've been supposedly since the UAB game. There's no reason we should not win, in my opinion, by 3 or 4 scores. What are your thoughts heading into Saturday?
You know what? I honestly would not be surprised if we see a slow first quarter, a slow start.
That's what we always do.
Yeah, right. We always do it. And then, you know, the fact that they haven't played in, 3 weeks? I hope fans are not expecting them to hit the ground running in this one. Eventually, I think the talent, you know, shows off, and it, you know, they pull away from Duke late in the game. But I would not be surprised if there's a slow start here. I do expect Miami on offense, at least, to get this run game going, get it back to where it was earlier in the season. And, you know, this may be a decent opportunity to do so, because you're playing a Duke team that, you know, their two best players are arguably their edge rushers. And those edge rushers, especially Chris Rump, has been giving Miami issues the past couple of years. So it may be best to get that ground game going, you know, loosen up those pass rushers that want to get after De'Aaron King, and then allow De'Aaron King and his receivers to find that rhythm as the game go on. And then fourth quarter, you start seeing big plays in the air.
And okay, so, and I heard a stat this morning. I was doing some research. So last year, we went up to Duke last year and lost 27-17. The biggest stat, though, excuse me, and I'm a big analytics guy, Chris Rump had 13 quarterback hurries or pressures in that single game.
Incredible.
And usually you, I mean, if you get four from a defensive end in one game, that's phenomenal. Smart. He had 13.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, this is the same offensive line that opened up the season by giving up 10 sacks to Florida. So I believe.
It's a different offensive line.
Well, yeah, we're talking about from that game when Rump had that big game, it was the same offensive line that was still Mike. Did Zion Nelson start that game? I believe he did.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Zion started every game last year.
Every game, yeah. So it was still an offensive line that was in flux. But 13 pressures in a game is ridiculous. And he also had a couple sacks to boot as well. So, you know, this has been – he has had decent games, some really good games against Miami the past couple of years. So he's probably the one guy that they're going to game plan against. And – again, I want to see that run game going again, man. Let's get back to where, you know, Harris and Chaney and Knighton were pulling off 4, 5, 6 yards, you know, a carry. And I think that was when the offense was at its most dangerous, in my opinion. Not what you've seen the past few weeks. I think when that run game is just – when they're getting downhill – you know, it's going to open up so much, especially when it comes to the zone read from Derrick King and things of that nature. It's going to allow Brevin Jordan to sneak behind the defense. It's going to allow those receivers to sneak over the top of, you know, over the safeties and stuff like that. So this is a contest where they're going to have to neutralize Rump. And I think that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when I'm not really sure what the problem with the running game is. I mean, I've gone back and watched the film. You know, we played some good run defense teams like Pitt and so on and so forth. Do you think it's more so the offensive line not making that push that they were in the first, you know, three games, or the running backs not seeing the holes? Because, I mean, the first three games, Don Chaney and Jalen Knight were really showing us something. Cam Harris looked like a lock to declare early for the NFL draft.
Right.
But since then, the run game, if it's not for Derrick King, then we literally have no run game. What do you think is the, you know, the biggest contributing factor to the lack of a running game?
I think Clemson laid the blueprint that a lot of other defenses followed. And if you go back to that Clemson game, Clemson wanted to make Derrick King the passer. They wanted to make him throw the ball in the air. They wanted to take away the run game. They wanted to make him a pure quarterback. And defenses started to follow that. If you notice, you know, that was the game where the run game got stuck, and it really hasn't been the same since. Pittsburgh followed that same blueprint. Virginia did the same thing. I think teams are approaching Miami wanting to make Derrick King beat him in the air. And the thing is, he's been doing that. So it's not like they've been really – it makes the offense even that much more difficult to defend, because it's now you're making him stay in the pocket and throw the ball, and now he's beating you with 4 touchdowns a game and 300-plus yards. So now you're really on your heels as a defense. But I think that's probably the biggest factor. Teams are just wanting to make him a pocket passer.
Okay, and so, I mean, what do you think we could do from a schematic standpoint to kind of get our edge back in the running game?
Well, I would like to see – well, for one, I think the run game needs to be established early. I think that's something that Brett Lashley has saw, and he's adapted to it. He sees that defenses are trying to take the run game away, but I think you still need to you know, factor it in early. One thing that I love about even going to the NFL, we see what Derrick Henry is doing, and we see how Derrick Henry is able to pull off those big chunk runs in the third and fourth quarter. Well, that's because in the first quarter, he's being fed. They're really not getting big plays there, but defenses are just they're getting hit. They're getting pounded. They're getting punched in the mouth early. I think that's what this offense needs to do. Still establish the run game, even if it's getting 3 yards a carry, maybe four. That's fine. It's going to open up in the second half because teams are just they're going to the tempo is going to wear him out. You're talking 80, 90 plays a game. Imagine yourself being a defender. You just ran 90 plays in the fourth quarter, and now you have to try to stop, you know, Cameron Harris. So that's I think that is going to be what Miami would have to do. Just even though they're not getting big plays, just establish it. Just get it out there.
Okay. I mean, I certainly agree with you there. And I mean, I guess how do you feel about how this game is going to go? Are you fairly confident in our ability to win this game tomorrow or Saturday?
Absolutely. I think this may be quite possibly the best game we see from the defense all year. Even you know, putting that Florida State game. I think this is a Duke offense that is turnover prone. Definitely. Uh-huh. They are 126 in the nation in takeaways per game. I mean, I'm sorry, giveaways per game. 126. They have to turn the ball over. They average three a game. So I think this may be a game where we see the turnover chain several times. And I think eventually that's what's going to be, you know, the deciding factor. Duke just cannot keep up because, you know, they can't sustain drives.
Yeah. Okay. Well, 126. Well, I knew they turned the ball over, but goddamn.
3.3.
Okay, so I have a question actually for both you guys. I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter on the timeline today. Mackenzie Milton from UCF is going to be hitting the transfer portal. He's a quarterback.
I think was going here.
Eric, I'll ask you first. Do you see him as a potential take for Manny Diaz and the Canes?
I don't know, man. I'm scared, to be honest with
you. Right? That's what I'm saying.
Because if you lean on a grad transfer quarterback like they did with Derek King, like, I want to know for sure he's able to play, he's ready to go. No offense to Mackenzie Milton, but I'm not quite sure. I mean, is he able to play? I mean, I know he's been cleared, but is it going to be kind of sort of like another Alex Smith situation where, you know, in D.C., yeah, Alex Smith is on the field, but let's be quite honest here. He's not himself, and he probably never will be because of that knee injury. I don't want them to go into 2021 leaning on Mackenzie Milton as the best option at quarterback. No offense, but I'm just not certain he's ready to play.
No, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, just that injury is just it's scary, man. And it was so bad that it's going to affect him for the rest of his career.
Right. He hasn't played in 2 years. So let's say you fast forward the clock now. His first game next year will be the first actual game, live game he's played in 3 years. Like, are we sure we want to rely on that? Like, I don't know.
Jordan, what do you think?
I'm kind of with you guys. I'm up in the air. You know, it's like, I mean, obviously it hinges on whether De'Ara King is coming back or not.
Which he is.
Yeah, I feel fairly confident that yes. But I get what you guys are saying. The ideal move is to just have Tyler Van Dyke seize that starting position. And, you know, with no doubt in anyone's mind, right? That's ideal. And that's what I've been saying about Cozy Perry.
Right.
You know, is like, I'd be worried if he's the starter against Alabama, because that means that Tyler Van Dyke isn't that convincing, right? Mm. So ideally, no, I don't really want Mackenzie Milton. As much as I love the story, I really hope the best for him. If he came here and, like, he was good, then I'd be super happy. But it's not what I want.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You know, the season opener next year against Alabama. Like,
I am not. Oh,
now, are you guys pretty much saying that Jake Garcia is not coming? Are you guys counting on that?
Unless it's kind of like a an Avante Williams, Romello Height situation where he surprises everybody on signing day and switches to mine. I think if it was going to happen, he would have at least decommitted from USC at this point. But yeah, I just don't really see it happening. And it's hard because they've only played three games, but USC's 3-0. I mean, it looks like, you know, things are good there for the time being, but,
mm-hmm.
You know what stinks is that I think we laid all of our eggs into one basket for the remaining 6 months of this recruiting period. And we do that so much.
Yeah.
And it pisses me off.
So stupid.
It's so dumb. Yeah. And we're at this position every single year where it's December and we don't have a quarterback signed. Yeah. And I want to ask you this, moving
cornerback
into I bring this up every episode because it is time to make a change. Thoughts on Mike Rumpf? Does he need to go?
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, but I'm not slowing down on this train.
So is this based on his recruiting history or the fact that he doesn't really develop corners the way he thought?
That so many people just make the argument that he can't recruit. You know why he can't recruit is because he doesn't develop. I mean, who has he sent any of his cornerbacks at Miami in? And this is his fifth year. Who of his cornerbacks are playing in the NFL right now? Mike Jackson's on a practice squad, I think. Trajan Bandy may be on a practice squad.
Corn Elder.
I mean, but it's like these kids, like a Jason Marshall, he will be playing on Sundays. Why would you want to come and play cornerback for Miami when – I don't know. Like, it's just time to make a change. Like, our cornerbacks – are just average at best. I mean, DJ Ivy and Al Blades should be so much better than they are right now.
Yeah.
And I think that outweighs the lack of recruiting. Those are my thoughts. And what do you think?
Now, what's interesting about this is Rump definitely, of course, has deep roots on the recruiting trail in Miami. As far as, you know, just him having the ability to, you know, to go from high school to high school to be able to talk to these guys. He has those roots because, of course, he's Mike Rump. Now, I'll give you that. He can definitely develop the relationship, but it is a problem. He can't close the deal. And I'm not talking on just, you know, a couple corners here and there. Like, it's literally, we see a gang of corners leave Miami every year, and it's insane the amount of times that we've seen it. And this year, I'm afraid we may not even get one. I mean, I know we're kind of holding out hope on Marquise Brown, but I don't know. It seems like it's still going to be last minute up in the air with him too.
It's so frustrating.
So frustrating. I think what makes it even more tough is the fact that he's Mike Rumpf. Like, if he was just a regular cornerbacks coach that never even played at Miami, we'd be like, okay, whatever. It's time for this guy to go. No, he's Mike Rumpf. Like, we're telling one of the best defenders over the last 20, 25 years with the program that he's not cutting it. It's tough, man. It really is. I think it depends. I don't even know if I want it to depend on the fact that he can't convince an 18-year-old to come to the school. Like, that seems a little.
Well, and the fact that we're getting 5-star players on in the other positions on defense. Like, how we're signing, we're going to bring in Cam Pinchins and James Williams at safety. But you don't have a cornerback committed?
Banda's getting 5-star safeties off the tree. Like, he's just plucking them off the trees left and right. It's incredible how we can get so many great safeties, but we can't get any great cornerbacks. Like,
the recruiting at linebacker and corner really, really needs to be addressed. And same with the coaching there, honestly.
If you ask me, I think several changes on defense, on the defensive staff, need to be made.
So I guess this means you're thinking Blake Baker needs to have some range.
Oh yeah.
A little bit. Okay. All right.
I mean, he's average. He's average at best. I mean, you're taking strides with your offensive staff to, you know, turn this program into what it should be. But on defense, you're with a guy like Blake Baker and a guy like Mike Rumpf, and honestly, with a position coach like Banda, I love him as a recruiter, but as a position coach, like we're just settling for average. And yeah. I don't think we are going to be the program that we can be with those guys on our coaching staff.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's how I feel.
We need to drop a bag, man. We need to go out and just we need to target a dude and make him a Godfather offer, right? We need to Manny needs to pick, you know, who is going to make his defense run and the same aggressive scheme that he's been running. And
you know what concerns me is that Manny's so loyal that he may not do anything like that. Manny would stick with these guys until the wheels fall off.
And you know what? That was the downfall in our last two head coaches. So
yeah, it was. This was to me. I felt like this was a year, honestly, where I wouldn't have mind Manny saying, "All right, Blake, you know what? I'm gonna call the defense this year." You can have the title. You can have whatever play sheet. You can do all that, whatever. I'm calling the plays this year because I feel like he finally has the right offensive coordinator. And I'm always the type of guy that if you have a defensive minded coach, and he hires a really sound offensive mind, let him run the offense. Do not bother him. Let him game plan. Let him do whatever. You may need to make some adjustments on game day. I get it. But let him be him. If you're a defensive-minded head coach, call the defense, or at least have some type of influence on it.
So my last question for you. Sorry, it was kind of a short interview, but my last question for you. It's a two-part question.
Okay.
Does De'Aaron King come back, and does Rhett Lashley come back next year?
Yes and yes.
I love it.
I'm hearing enough from De'Aaron at this point in the season because normally, like guys like Quincy Roche, like we know he's going. Normally, the end of the year, a guy would know, like, okay, I'm like, there's no turning around him. I'm going to, and it just hearing his interviews and hearing him talking, like he genuinely is thinking about coming back, definitely.
Yeah.
As far as Lashley goes, this may sound weird. I'm kind of glad Lashley struggled a little bit for a couple games with the play calling because I think that kind of scared some head coaching talks off. I wanted him to come back next year. Like that was a big fear for me. You get a hot offensive guy, he has a great year, and he's gone, i.e. Joe Brady from LSU. So I think Lashley is back for 2021. Now, after that, I don't know. He has a great
year. If he comes back 2022, then man, then God is really looking out for us.
Well, okay. Here's my thing with this. You guys mentioned about, you know, Diaz opening up, you know, dropping a bag or whatever and having the right guys on the staff. Now we see it for sure at Clemson with Venables, who's had head coaching, you know, rumors for years now, but it looks like he's not going anywhere. So if you're a guy like Diaz and you got a guy like Lashley on board, why not? I mean, at least make him the highest paid, you know, offensive coordinator in the ACC or maybe, or even in the country, whatever. It doesn't matter. But if you want to keep a guy like that, because a mind like Rhett Lashley in today's game with the way that high school guys are now, like that is so vital.
Yeah. So vital. Agreed, man.
Yeah.
Agreed. Okay, so my last question for you is let's say that we beat Duke and then you know, Clemson takes care of business against Virginia Tech on Saturday. So the ACC championship is clinched, right? Because they changed the rules on us. It's Notre Dame and Clemson.
Yeah, they just handed it to Notre Dame.
Right. How stupid is that? Yeah. What do you do with the North Carolina game? Because I am firmly in the camp of cancel that game and take your New Year's Six invite. And, you know, the ACC screwed us. So give them the middle finger, man. Like, we don't need to play North Carolina. How do you feel about that?
Man.
That's a hot take.
It is. And I'll be honest, North Carolina scares me, man.
Yeah, dude. I mean, our defense is kind of soft. I mean,
I'm honest with you, Wake Forest even almost had me, you know, sweating a couple bullets too, man. That offense is good.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize it, but that offense is good. I don't see the harm in it, honestly. You know, if you beat Duke and, you know, I'm sure North Carolina will probably want to play, but how much would it really benefit Miami at this point? I mean, a 9-1 record, you got a New Year's Six bowl game. I mean, that's money in the bank. I'll take that, honestly. I just don't see the need. If there's no possible way they can't make the ACC title game at this point, what's the point of playing it?
Yeah, I agree. Just, I mean, we're a one-loss Miami is getting into a New Year's Six. Right. So you just got to take your invite,
right.
You know, say screw the rest of the schedule and let the ACC deal with it because they screwed us, man. Like, I don't care about them. I don't care about their revenue.
Well, they screwed a lot of teams, man. Yeah. If we're being honest, you know, they screwed a lot of teams. And, you know, I know they screwed Clemson a little bit because I still kind of wanted to see them play Florida State so they can put up 80 on Florida State. That would have been lovely. But they screwed a lot of teams, man. And it's been a wacky season. They've already missed 3 weeks. Just get this game here, call it 9-1, take a month to, you know, for the early signing period, get ready for your bowl game, and just call it a year, man.
Yep. I agree, man.
You know, that's a very, very good point. I like this.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. Okay. All right, Eric. Thank you so much for coming on, man. I know we've been trying to get you back on the show, and I'm glad it finally worked out, and hope everything's going good, and we'll get you back on here soon, brother.
Definitely, definitely. Hey, you know, that early recruiting period is coming up, man. If you guys want to just get up on here and just chat about recruits, I'm all
here. Absolutely.
Just reach out.
All right, brother. Okay.
Absolutely, man.
We'll talk to you later. And before you leave, just tell people where they can find your work.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @Eric_Robinson. Like what was pointed out earlier, I do a lot of Falcon stuff for the Falcoholic, SB Nation, but I also write for Tackler Media. And I got a game preview coming out this weekend for Clemson and Virginia Tech, so be on the lookout for that.
Cool. Hey,
Eric, until next time.
All right. Yeah, you know it's all love, but I'm gonna keep teasing you about the Falcons and how much I can't stand Matt Ryan. So expect that.
That man is a Hall of Famer, all right? You're not gonna convince me otherwise.
He's gonna be the most mediocre Hall of Fame QB of all.
Oh boy, oh boy.
I'm just kidding, man. I'm just kidding. I only said it because we were sending you off. So
we can say that discussion for another show.
All right, man. Thanks.
All right, take care, Eric.
Yeah.
Good show.
Yeah, that was great. Two amazing guests. Hopefully we can get them both back on soon, man.
Hell yes, hell yes. All right. Anything before we sign off?
Nope. No, I'm all good. Just I don't know. Just working, man. Just working myself into the grave, but I love it.
Yeah, I got to get up in 6 hours or 7 hours. So hopefully we get a win on Saturday, and we will talk to you guys after that. So go Canes.
Cool. Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast.